ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय afternoon from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 18, the perfection of renunciation. This is text number 59 today. We've been going through the Bhagavad Gita. Now we've reached this final chapter and coming close to the end of the final chapter. So text 59, it's on the board behind me. It's okay. The verse is in Sanskrit. Sanskrit's usually written in the Devanagari script, but there's a system for transliterating this into English. So it's in the Roman alphabet here with a few little special diacritic marks. This is so we can all chant this mantra. The text is also a mantra, a spiritual sound, and by chanting we become purified. So I will say each word or a couple of words sometimes, and you say after me, and then we'll do each line like that, each pada responsibly. So Bhagavad Gita 18:59. You say after me. Yad
Bhankaram
Asitya Na Yotsya
Iti
Manyase Mityaisha Vyavasayas Te Prakritis Svam Niyokshati Yadaham Karma Sritya Nayotya Iti Manyase Nityaisha Vyavasayaste Prakritistvam Niyokshati Yadahankaramasritya Nayotya Iti Manyase Nityaisha Vyavasayaste Prakritistvam Niyokshati Yadahankaramasritya Nayotya Iti Manyase Nityaisha Vyavasayaste Prakritistvam Niyokshati
Yadam karma sritya
Nayotya iti manyase
Nityaya Shavya Vasayaste.
Prakriti Swam Yotsati.
Yadangaramashitya.
Nayotsati manyase.
Nityaya Shavya Vasayaste.
Prakriti Swam Yotsati.
Yet, if
Ahankaram
of false ego,
Asritya,
taking shelter,
Na Yotsye,
I shall not fight.
Iti, thus,
Manyase,
you think.
Nitya,
Eshaha,
this is all false.
Vyavasayaha,
determination.
Te, your.
Prakritihi,
material nature.
Tvam,
you.
Niyokshati,
will engage. Translation. If you do not act according to my direction and do not fight, then you will be falsely directed. By your nature, you will have to engage. By your nature, you will have to be engaged in warfare. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Arjuna was a military man and born of the nature of the Kshatriya. Therefore, his natural duty was to fight. But due to false ego, he was fearing that by killing his teacher, grandfather, and friends, he would incur sinful reactions. Actually, he was considering himself master of his actions, as if he were directing the good and bad results of such work. He forgot that the Supreme Personality of Godhead was present there, instructing him to fight. That is the forgetfulness of the conditioned soul. The Supreme Personality gives directions as to what is good and what is bad, and one simply has to act in Krishna consciousness to attain the perfection of life. No one can ascertain his destiny as the Supreme Lord can. Therefore, the best course is to take direction from the Supreme Lord and act. No one should neglect the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead or the order of the spiritual master, who is the representative of God. One should act unhesitatingly to execute the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That will keep one safe under all circumstances. Ma Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Ukti Namane Namaste Sarasate Deve Gauravari Pacharane Nivishesha Suryavari Paschacha De Satarane Om Angyanam Timadan Vasya Dhananjana Sulakaya Chatsuru Niritam Jainam Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Pancha Kalpa Trityas Chakripa Sindhu Veva Chapatitanam Pavanidyo Vaishnavidyo Namo Namaha. So here, Krishna is saying to Arjuna now, he's already counseled him earlier in this chapter, in a few verses. In all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection in such devotional work. be fully conscious of me. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If, however, you do not work in such consciousness, but act through false ego, not hearing me, you will be lost. And then today's verse, if you do not act according to my direction and do not fight, then you will be falsely directed. By your nature, you will have to be engaged in warfare. So as most of you know, this Bhagavad Gita is a portion of a larger work, the Mahabharata. And the Mahabharata tells the story of the events leading up to the battle of Kurukshetra. And at that battle, that time of the battle, it was a civil war. There were two parties contending. One, they were, as they say in India, cousin brothers. There were two brothers, Dhritarashtra and Pandu. And so their sons were fighting with each other. Actually, the whole story, of course, is that the Pandavas, the sons of Pandu are called Pandu, are called Pandavas, and Arjuna is one of those, Yudhisthira, Arjuna, Bhimasena, Nakula, Sahadeva, these are the Pandavas. They were actually the ones who were supposed to inherit the kingdom. They were very godly and very pious. But their father died young. They were left orphans as little children. Their uncle, Dhritarashtra, raised them. He was supposed to raise them until they would go to adulthood and Yudhisthira would become the king. Dhritarashtra wanted his own sons to be king. And his own sons were very ambitious. And by so many ways, there were efforts to disinherit the Pandavas, including killing them, even while they were very young, and cheating them. There's a whole story. The Mahabharata is a great story. And so finally it came down to a fight. Although Krishna, who came in on this, he was also acting as a contemporary king at that time, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who had descended to earth, and he was on the side of the Pandavas. He did not act as a combatant in this war, although he was a king, but rather he acted as Arjuna's chariot driver in a non-combatant role. But here you see, just before the battle, he's giving Arjuna guidance and direction. Because Krishna is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the Super Soul who is guiding everyone in their hearts. So at the moment this battle is about to begin, Arjuna suddenly decides he can't go through with it because it's a civil war, and on the other side are his cousins, his grandfather, who circumstantially had to fight on the other side, his teacher, who had been his instructor in military arts, both of them was on the other side. And so naturally, being a compassionate person, he didn't want to fight. He said, I can't do it. But Krishna had descended to earth for a particular purpose. And one of the things that had happened at that time is that irreligion had prevailed. And the sons of Dhritarashtra, the Kurus on the other side, they were not pious. and he wanted Yudhisthira, the pious king, and his brothers to rule. So Krishna, although he didn't, in one sense, take sides, he was nevertheless the supporter and the encourager of the Pandavas. So he wanted Arjuna to fight this battle. Most of us in the West were introduced to the Bhagavad Gita by Srila Prabhupada, who brought this Bhagavad Gita as it is. And Prabhupada came to start this Krishna consciousness movement in America in 1965-66. The Vietnam War was going on. We were, all of us, people my age, were very much anti-war. And it was not very nice to hear somebody saying you should fight. We're very suspicious of that. So Prabhupada says here in the beginning that Arjuna was a military man born of the nature of the Kshatriyas. So earlier in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has said, Chaturvarnam mayastrasya guna karma svabhagasama. There's a natural division in society of four types of people, four varnas. The brahmanas, priestly or intellectuals, kshatriyas, people who are rulers, you could say politicians and military people, vaishyas, the productive group who trade and farming, business, and finally shudras, those who are workers. And he says, this is, Krishna says, I made this division. This is also not fashionable to think that people are different. Of course, from the spiritual perspective, everyone is equal. We are all of us spirit souls, eternal spirit souls. But we are in different bodies according to our past activities. We take birth and people have different natures. So this is this idea of when he says to Arjuna, even if you don't want to fight in this battle, ultimately you will have to because your own nature will compel you to do it. So Prabhupada said he was a military man. He was a Kshatriya. And in the 18th, earlier in this chapter, text 43, Krishna mentions the characteristics of Kshatriya. These are the people with natural characteristics like this. See, human society is like a social body. And just like our body has head, arms, bellies, and legs. And they all work together for the good of the whole. So the social body, as ordained by God, has a head, the brahmanas, who have vision, they can see. They're socially unattached intellectuals who are in the mode of goodness and therefore can actually have genuine knowledge for guiding society. Nowadays we really don't, our intellectuals are not brahmanas, and they're totally bewildered, and they're completely unnerved by relativistic and nihilistic conclusions, and they can't give guidance to anybody. Because as Krishna shows in this Bhagavad Gita, knowledge depends upon goodness, sattva, certain existential conditions by which one can have genuine spiritual and material knowledge in a detached way. Well, we don't produce brahmanas anymore. It says in this age everyone is fourth class. No brahmins are there. But this is the natural idea, is that there are people who can give guidance and direction. But they are not hands-on managers. Those are the kshatriyas, who are like the arms that protect. Then the next are the vaishyas, like the belly. They produce the wealth of society. And finally, the laborers. Shudra means general assistant. The people who are not really capable of independent action. In the Vedic society, the Brahmins, the Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas in different ways were not economically dependent on anyone else. That means if you, to be a Vaishya, if you're a businessman, you should be an entrepreneur. You shouldn't take wages. As soon as you take wages from somebody, you're a Shudra. But today everyone's a Shudra. There's no, the professors have to get their paycheck from the university, and that means ultimately they're servants of corporate interests or the big donors or whoever else is running things behind them. But originally, the intellectuals did not take money. Brahmanas are supposed to simply live on donations and not take a salary. It's, the Kshatriyas, they live by taxation and fines and so on. Vaishyas, they make their own wealth by agriculture, trade, and so on. Anyway, this is the natural division of society. So Arjuna had these characteristics of a Kshatriya. And so I'll just read them to you. Just first let me see, here's a Brahmin, just to give you an idea. He says that for a Brahmin, the intellectual who's supposed to guide everybody, these are the characteristics: peacefulness, self-control, austerity, purity, tolerance, honesty, knowledge, wisdom, and religiousness. These are the natural qualities by which a Brahmana works. So that's one type of person. Then the Kshatriya is a little different. Heroism, tejas, power, determination, daksham, resourcefulness, the ability to get things done. Courage in battle. The Sanskrit literally not running away in battle. The real Kshatriya is somebody who can keep presence in mind and courage in the middle of battle. They don't run away. Dhanam, generosity, munificence, and Ishwara Bhava means leadership, having the mood of being the controller. It's literally what. So they're natural type of people. They have these qualities. They're innate, and by training and education, they should be brought out and used to their best ability. Where somebody has a brahminical nature, child, you can determine, then they're educated in that way. Originally, this system was not hereditary. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, they're determined by guna and karma, by their characteristics, their qualities, and by their work. Later on, it became hereditary, and then you had incompetent people at these different posts. But so this was Arjuna's nature, that he was a Kshatriya. So Krishna is saying that you'll be compelled. You cannot walk away from this fight. Your sense of duty, you know that this is what you ought to do, will make you fight anyway. You won't avoid it. You have your nature. So your decision is not really to fight or not to fight, but in what state of consciousness are you supposed to fight? Now, Krishna, at that time when Krishna came, he came himself, he was born in a royal order, and about the age, in his youth, of course, he was hiding out because he was hidden out by his family so he could grow up, because King Kamsa had heard a prophecy that he would be killed by the eighth son of Devaki. So he was hidden away and grew up among cowherd people, simple rural folk in Vrindavan. But then when he became mature, I mean, he must have 14 years old or 15 years old, he went to Mathura, and he killed Kamsa, the great demon who was running things. Then he went to Dwarka and made an island fortress in Dwarka, a city where he ruled from. And then he was engaged in, as a warrior, as a kshatriya, as a king, challenging in battle and defeating Kamsa's allies, like Jarasandha and so many others, one after another. This way he was ridding the world of these demonic people who had somehow or other taken position of rulership. So at the same time this was going on, this contest was happening in Hastinapur for the rulership there. And there he also took sides. And so this was the will of the Lord, that on this battlefield he would gather together all everybody else who was remaining, who should be killed, and brought them all together at one time in one place, and was ready to complete his mission. He was doing this, gathering together as the super soul, as the controller of everything, and then saying to Arjuna, okay, now you be my instrument. You simply be my instrument. So Arjuna was hesitating to obey Krishna, because it was not something he really wanted to do by his own feelings and so on. But now he's understanding who Krishna is and what the Lord's purpose is. And so he's being engaged in this way, according to his own nature, in Krishna's activities. This was a war of dharma. Dharma means religion, a war of religious principles. Just like in Christian thought, there's this concept of a just war. Some cases war is justified. Sometimes it's unjust. Today, I think in the modern world, there's no such thing really as a just war. It's like one band of thieves fighting the other band of thieves. And you say, we're the good guys. And there aren't any. But sometimes it actually happens that one side is good and the other side is bad. Now everybody may claim to be good, but that's another thing. But we always do, because everybody has their propaganda machinery. And nobody says, we want oil, they say we want freedom. Or whatever. They may disguise low purposes under high-sounding banners. But because that happens doesn't mean that every case is like that. So sometimes there are actually, will come down to battles where religious principles are at stake. And then it is and that fighting on religious principles is the duty of this kshatriya. So here in this Bhagavad Gita, this is a revelation of what was happening at this time on this battlefield. And Arjuna actually saw, earlier in the Bhagavad Gita, he saw the universal form of the Lord, and he saw the Lord manifest on this battlefield as the face of death. And it was that all the soldiers were going into his blazing mouths and being crushed by his teeth. And Arjuna said, who are you? What is your mission? And he says, I am time. And I have come to engage all people. And he says, everyone on this battlefield today will die except for you, the Pandavas. So he actually had a kind of fast forward and saw the future in this terrible Asa vision of this, what's called the Kala Rupa, the form of time. Well, of course, here is God himself, and he's acting in this way. But we should understand something. When Krishna appears in this world, whatever he does is all good for everybody. So it's said that everybody on the battlefield of Kurukshetra who died during that battle, because the Lord was present on the battlefield, was liberated. If they were attracted to Krishna or favorable to Krishna, they were liberated to the kingdom of God called Vaikuntha Loka. If they were indifferent to God or hostile to him, they were still liberated, but they were merged into the impersonal Brahma Jyoti. But in any case, they did not take birth in the material world again. So both of them, both achieved a very valuable destination because of the presence of the Lord. So he's all auspicious for anybody. So the point is that what Krishna has taught in this Bhagavad Gita is that actually all of us have to act under the direction of God. When he says, let me just read the next verse. It's very short, and it concludes this line of thought. Well, it doesn't quite conclude it, but brings it further. He says, Krishna says in the next verse, Swabhava yena kaunteya nibadha soena karmana kartu nichchasi yan mohat karish yavashavitat. Under illusion, you are now declining to act according to my direction. But compelled by the work, born of your own nature, you will act all the same, O son of Kuti. And Prabhupada says here in the purport, if one refuses to act under the direction of the Supreme Lord, then he is compelled to act by the modes in which he is situated, out of goodness, passion, or ignorance. Everyone is under the spell of a particular combination of the modes of nature and is acting in that way. But anyone who voluntarily engages himself under the direction of the Supreme Lord becomes glorious. So when we act in the world, we may say, I'm doing what I feel like doing, but according to the Bhagavad Gita, we are actually acting under the control of material nature, the modes of nature. We are driven by the modes of nature. You can see this very simply. People say, I want to be free. Like some, say, 15-year-old boy. I want to do whatever I want. My parents say, don't smoke cigarettes, don't smoke cigarettes. That's a restriction of my freedom. And so, in order to be free from that, I'll smoke cigarettes. Now I'm free, I'm smoking cigarettes. What happens? Now he's in bondage and is the slave of tobacco and Liggett and Myers or whoever, and he can't not smoke. So he's driven. So actually everyone is being driven in this way because we have a desire to enjoy in this world, we have become driven by our different kinds of desires according to our nature. And we say we are free, but we actually cannot change it. So we are under the control of material nature. If we want to become free from the control of material nature, because under the control of material nature also has certain implications. It means that we grow old, we become ill and we die. This is how material nature works. This is called Mrityu Samsara, Vartmani. We are on the path of repeated birth and death in the material world because we are under the control of material nature. Therefore, the goal of Vedic culture, the highest goal, is to become free from the control of material nature. And that means becoming free from the control of material desires. How do we do that? So what the Bhagavad Gita is saying, that we are actually meant to be controlled by Krishna. If we are under the control of Krishna's order, then we are not under the control of material nature. We have to be controlled one way or another. But if we are acting under the order of God, then we are not acting under the order of material nature. While we are under what is called the internal energy of God. Material nature is called the external energy, so we act under the internal nature. Otherwise, becoming liberated from the modes of material nature is very difficult. Some people try to do it by not acting at all, but this is so unnatural. And you cannot live without acting. It's very, very difficult. But there's some people who try to stop all their activities. This is actually, if you practice yoga, gradually the yogis, by pranayama, they can slow down their heartbeat and the metabolism of their bodies and everything. And so where they don't have to eat and even can slow their breathing way down. That's no way to live. It is a very artificial attempt. But we are by nature active, because the spirit is active. So we are meant to act under the directions of Krishna. When we act to satisfy God, then those acts produce no karma. They produce no bondage. And whatever I do, if it's actually under the orders of God, then I am free from bondage in the material world. So then the question is, how do we know what God wants? And here especially it comes down to fighting in a battle. Because everyone played that famous song by Bob Dylan, now everyone has God on his side. But the point is not to claim that God is on our side. Our point is we should be on God's side. And we should find out what God actually wants us to do. Well, there's a couple of things, maybe we can talk about this a little more as in the next verse. But in summary, first of all, the Lord is situated in our hearts as the super soul. That's in the very next verse. Everyone's heart is the super soul, and he's directing us. But as long as our consciousness is polluted, we cannot hear what the super soul is saying. So therefore, the Vedas give us direction how we can purify our consciousness. And when the consciousness is purified, then we can actually hear what Krishna wants. Now, at the same time, the Lord appears and delivers things like the Bhagavad Gita. Now, there are very particular instructions here for Arjuna, but also there are general instructions for everybody. So we can also hear what Krishna wants from studying this Bhagavad Gita. So there's still a problem. People read the Bhagavad Gita and they get different conclusions from it, and so many different interpretations. Also, in the Vedic literature, and including the Bhagavad Gita, there are certain conditions are told to us, the state we have to be in to be able to understand the Bhagavad Gita. It's like if a doctor gives you a prescription, you go to the pharmacist and you get the medicine. Well, one thing is you have to take the medicine. But that's not enough. You have to take it according to the directions on the bottle. Well, actually, we are given the directions that put us in the right state where we can understand what God is saying. We can read it in the Bhagavad Gita, and it will also hear what Krishna says in the heart. The third thing is there are representatives of Krishna. And Prabhupada mentions this in today's purport. No one should neglect the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead or the order of the spiritual master who is the representative of God. So God has also sent for us people who can convey those instructions. Since we cannot hear the Lord in the heart, and since we may not even be able to understand the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has sent people who are his representatives, who can guide us and direct us according to what Krishna wants. They know what Krishna wants. How do they know? Because they have also heard from Krishna's representative, who has also heard from Krishna's representative. This is called parampara, a system. And when Krishna comes, he delivers the truth and trains people to receive it. Those people who receive it properly, they take it into their hearts and they pass it on to the next generation. Those people are also trained to be the proper recipients, and they receive it and they pass it on. And not only is the same message conveyed on teams, but also the spiritual potency comes down in this way through the cyclic succession of one after another. This is also taught in the Bhagavad Gita. So in different ways, Krishna actually, if we really want to follow God and we want to know what he wants, if we are sincere, he will actually make sure we find out. And it will not even be all that subtle, because we will understand in so many ways, in so many sources, what Krishna is saying, and we will find that those sources also confirm each other. Now this is the process. Okay, better stop now. Any questions or comments? Time for one or two? Anyone? Okay. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Where's our man to make the announcements? We have a few announcements. Are you coming or Joe Chai?
I'm
huh? Okay, go get him. Right. You missed his cue.
Hare Krishna. Thank you all for coming in Sunday Peace. We have visiting with us Arcadia University students. And I'm very happy to have you with us. We have in the back of the schoolhouse here, there's a room set aside so you guys can ask questions and answers. There's a couple of devotees that will take you over there right now. We have prasadam set aside for you over there, so you can just go and take prasad, and then a couple of devotees will go over where you can have a question and answer session. Arvind, raise your hand. He'll escort you over there. And
raise your hand again.
Gayatri, stand up. You can just follow these two, and we can get you situated over. Thank you very much for coming. At 7:30, there'll be another RT, so please come back if you like. This Thursday, April 6th, is the appearance day of Lord Ramachandra.
Yeah, just so
we'll be having a program.